Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
Here we go. A game day and a potential clincher. We just haven't been there before a whole bunch, but we're ready to rock and roll. It is a busy show today. We've got Eric Tkachuk coming up. We'll talk to him at 12:30. A few other surprises as well. But first, let's talk to Lou.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Clock runs down and the sea of red rises again. Game over. Series over. The Flames trailing 3-0 and 4-3 in this game. Come from behind, they defeat the Canucks by a final score of 7-4 in Game 6, and they win this best-of-seven series 4-2, and for the first time since 2004, they advance to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Hasta la vista, Canucks. The Flames are going to Disneyland to do some duck hunting in the Western Conference semifinals.
Oh, yeah, there's Derek Wills from 5 years ago. Peter, it's been that long.
It has been that long, Kelly, and it struck me this morning as I plan out some of the things we want to address every day on the show, and it hit me very early that in all the time I've been around the Calgary Flames, which is basically since 2008, 2009, mm-hmm. with a little hiccup in between, I have only seen one opportunity for this team to be in a clinching game situation. And that was that game, April 25th, 2015, a 7-4 victory that did not start well, a 3-0 first period deficit, and led to my favorite goal in my time of being around the team, and that was Matt Stajan's game winner, and it almost brings me to tears every time I think about him and that goal and what he'd been through. So, but the storyline is today, here's a team that's put itself in this position for the first time after, you know, being swept in series last year, lost in 5 games. For your organization, we wonder sometimes about this group and maybe why it's difficult in hard situations. Well, Kelly, doesn't it speak to the fact that until you have more reps doing things, it probably is going to be difficult to do it and be consistent in how you do it?
Yeah, everyone, it's a cliche because it's true. It's the hardest game to get up for, and it's that to put them away because you have to do it. We had Warner on today, and he said he feels that it's tougher on the team that's about to be eliminated. It's more pressure. He's been in both situations, obviously. Mm-hmm. But in Calgary, when you think about it, you take 2004 and what a great run it was, and all the great things that happened with that. You take that out, and you go past, you know, from 1990 to present day. There's been a lot of just couldn't get it done, couldn't get to a situation where you could eliminate a team. It's been tough, and that's why Flames fans have that kind of feeling they have, and they have every right to be because they've seen this movie before.
They have, and even I was listening this morning when Rhett said that, and I think Rhett 100% believes that, and he's been there and done that. But you know why I think Rhett feels that way, Kelly?
Why is that?
Because Rhett had a lot of reps of being in big games and in big situations. Yeah. And for Rhett, what's the greatest sticking point for Rhett? Is that he didn't win.
Yeah.
So for him, he got used to even being in the mindset for him. You know, if I was playing psychologist for a minute, yeah, I get why he thinks that it's easier on the Flames, but I'm not sure I completely back that because he learned to feel the way he did because of being in some ways on the short end of those situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if it helps in a weird way. I was thinking about this morning. Does it help the Flames that they aren't here in Calgary and around with the hype and people trying to get tickets and the buzz and the Red Mile and all that kind of stuff, where they can just focus. They're in the bubble. They're in their hotel. They've done their practice. They've had some time off. They know their opposition, and they can just go to work?
Yes, I believe that.
Yeah.
I actually think, even if you think about this edition, right? Because as much as we talk about history, you know what history matters going into tonight? It only matters, I think, because of the reps and the more reps you get. But outside of that, this is a different group with a different feel and a different journey. But I also think with this team, were they better at home or better on the road? This group.
This group here?
This group was better on the road.
Yeah.
And what do you have less of on the road?
Distractions.
What do you have even less of in a bubble?
Distractions and people on you, because you have one thing to do. You have, your life is basically this.
What has Jeff talked about with this group over and over? You know what else I like about them being in the bubble? You have no choice but to be accountable to others. You know why? Because you're around,
you're around them all the time.
Eating
them. Yeah.
Yes.
It's not like you
isn't that a reminder to your teammates? Like, there's always kind of, whether somebody's saying it or isn't saying it, you can't really get away from that togetherness. And I add one more thing about this team. I actually think this team likes one another by and large. They're a good bunch of guys. They like being around. I think what they've struggled in is they know how to like one another. I don't think they've always had an easy time asking one another for more. And that doesn't come from me. That comes from their head coach, who keeps steering that more and more. Now, yesterday with Jeff, who I think, if you're going to defer to people, defer to guys who have been there and done that. And there's a couple guys on this team that have been there and done that. We're going to get to one in just a second in Milan Lucic. But even in Jeff, and it's not just when you win either, Kelly. It's also when you lose, because you see all of it. So Jeff was asked about clinching games and, more importantly, killer instinct, and his thoughts when he hears about being in these situations and killer instinct. Here's what he had to say.
I don't really think about killer instinct that much, to be honest with you. You know, we just talk about getting to our game. So, you know, we feel like if we play our game, that gives us a really good opportunity to win. And, you know, that's where we're focusing. We focus on the process all the time. So, you know, we're not asking anybody to do extraordinary things. We just want our guys to get to our game and play our game as hard as they can. So, you know, I think it makes it easier for them to focus on what they need to focus on. But as far as, you know, hammering a killer instinct into people, you know, I don't place too much stock in that. It's an emotional time, but it's also a time where you really have to be focused in on your execution. So, as I said, we're just worried about ourselves, and we're worried about getting to our game, and you know, the rest of it will take care of itself.
Yeah, I wonder about the killer instinct thing, because it's kind of like, well, if you do the opposite of that, so you don't have the killer instinct like during the regular season or whatever. Like, what does that mean? You play hockey, you have your process, you're coached, you know your line mates, you know what, okay, this is what we do in the power play, this is what we're going to do in penalty kill. Killer instinct, I think, is just something the media comes up with.
It is. You know what the media probably in some ways should shift their attention to? Can you execute at a high level when it matters and means the most? Can you use that emotion and not let it overwhelm you?
Block out the interference.
Right.
But
everybody's different, right? There's pragmatic people, there's emotional people, there's all kinds of different people. But what it is collectively, you have to buy in and you have to do you the best that you can. And I think that's the great separator. Some people, like, they get very nervous when it gets hard. And I understand, because when we're in big games or big relationships or we have big job interviews, that requires a lot to be able to execute. Hockey players aren't any different. You know what you have to do. There isn't one guy in that room right now as they've finished, but when they go into the afternoon and they're going to have a long time today to think about the opportunity, can you execute tonight?
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Yeah.
With all the extra emotion, because it's different in the playoffs. And some people can, and some people can't. But now, back to our first subject, you also need some reps to learn how to do it.
Yeah. And if you're the Flames, they've got some guys that have played in the playoffs, and they've played some big games too. Mm-hmm. Everybody kind of gets to that point. So it's you can't really prove yourself until you have a chance to prove yourself.
No.
You can't hammer away on a guy that hasn't been in the playoffs before because he hasn't had a chance. He hasn't been in the NHL before. But some guys have, obviously, and they've been in, they should know how it feels when it goes the wrong way for you.
They should. And when I think about this team and Jeff Ward and the job that he has done to try and, to me, as a coach, as a boss, anywhere, you're trying to create, and it's the hardest thing to do in sports, a winning culture. But it comes mostly, whatever you're selling to your group, they need to buy and they need to understand. And it's also up to the individuals, the players, because guess what? They win the games. The coaches don't. But they have to challenge themselves to go, you know, it's, I truly believe in dealing with you, Kelly, you believe in veteran people to help bring younger people along. Well, this isn't any different. So if I'm a Calgary Flame, even a veteran Calgary Flame, do you know what it takes to win? Well, not yet, because you haven't done it. Now, like you said, you haven't had a lot of chances, but one guy on this team has, and he's been doing it for a long time, and that's Milan Lucic. Jeff knows him. Selling Jeff's message, he needs people to do it. And this guy, does he have the same skill set as he used to? No.
No.
But does he know how to win? Does he know how to manage the key moments? Even he had to manage himself the other day. He went from having a goal that he thought he scored to give the team a 2-goal lead. Then he took a penalty. Then he was all hot and bothered about that. But then who scored that big power play goal later to put the team away? He did.
Yeah.
And as you'll hear from Jeff Ward, we know the relationship. I don't think he could value that. And that's why they went out and got him for nights like tonight.
Brings a lot of stability to the locker room. Having a guy in your locker room that's been there can be an extremely calming thing for your team. He knows how to react in all different situations, you know, whether you're up in a series, whether you're down in a series, coming off a good game, coming off a bad game, you know, playing well in the period, having stretches where you're not playing well in a period and how you respond to all those things. He's seen everything that you can possibly see in playoffs with how many playoff games that he's played. So having that experience in our locker room was something that we missed last year. It's something that has been a tremendous benefit for our team to this point in time. But, it's nice as a young player and as a veteran guy who hasn't been in a lot of playoff games that you take a look at him, how he prepares, how he carries himself, what he's saying. And I think it gives our guys a fairly high comfort level that they're always going to be in control as long as their focus is in the right place. You know, we talk about just focusing on what you can control. And he certainly, you know, is a living example of that for us on a daily basis in our locker room.
I think a guy like Lucic has been key for our locker room in situations like this where I know it's been talked about. We don't have a ton of playoff experience and he's been all the way. And Wardo, obviously the same thing. He's been through it. And the playoffs are a pretty daunting experience where you look at it this year, you need, 19 wins to win the Stanley Cup. It's, if you stand back in the beginning and look at that, it seems like a lot. But I think that Wardo and Lucic and G and all the guys in our leadership group have done a good job of just trying to focus on one game at a time instead of trying to worry about winning 19 games or whatever it is. It's just worried about the next game, playing one really good game. I think that's been really effective for our group and in terms of our preparation and then the result on the ice.
There you go. There's Derek Ryan talking about the process, talking about the veterans, talking about Milan Lucic. It's a process when you say how many games you got to win the Stanley Cup. That's a little daunting, right?
It is.
But it's been interesting with you know, this process and this year? Because I think, Lou, I think these guys, I don't know if maybe the media or the fans are selling these guys short, but there's some playoff experience on this team, but there's also a lot of, this year has taught them a lot, and it's taught them about perseverance and how to, like, cut out the noise, because there's been all kinds of crazy stuff happen for all teams. Like, they talk about, you know, the adversity the Winnipeg Jets have gone through with all their injuries. Well, the Flames have had crazy stuff happen to them, too. Maybe, you know, some injuries, too, not as many as the Jets have. But they've had the coaching thing happen with Bill Peters. They had, you know, TJ Brody.
No
they
question.
Had this, the COVID thing that everyone's had to deal with.
They had their tails handed to them last spring.
Yeah.
When they were the number one seed going up against the number eight seed. You know what I think it really boils down to is this. And I was never a big reader, to be honest, until COVID. But I started reading a lot of books during COVID, and here's one I would recommend to anyone, and it so applies to sports. It's a book called Grit.
Grit.
Grit by Angela Duckworth. And it's underneath it, it's Grit, a story of passion and perseverance. And I think the more your team and anybody that needs to be successful, the more that grit factor goes up, the better chance that you have. And I see the Flames' grit factor going up because I think the guy in part leading the way, the coach, I know he reads and he believes and he's helped me to think different about reading and challenging myself. If you like leadership, well, then learn more about leadership. So I've challenged myself as being fascinated about mentoring and being a good teammate to read and research. And here's what grit really is all about, Kelly. In life, we always give extra leash to talent.
Mm-hmm.
We find excuses for talent.
Yeah.
But it's the work. And when you combine great talent with great work and will, that's how we get to win titles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's I could bring it down, but I don't have time. I have a sign in my office, and it's kind of like the 10 kind of must-dos for radio, and the one is number 9, but it should be number 1, and it's basically a quote from Bobby Knight that everybody wants to win, but not everybody is prepared to do the work to win.
Right.
And it's the most, it doesn't matter if it's game 4 of the qualifying round. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, you're trying to make that sales call. It doesn't matter if you're trying to get this radio station to be stronger and stronger each day. It's so true. And come, you know, 8:30 tonight, the cliches will be over. All the story, all that stuff won't matter anymore. It'll be what they do. And it can be as simple as, you know, game 3, I noticed all 4 lines working their tails off. And I noticed all 3 D pairings busting their ass to make sure they got this going. And they need
and
that.
And you had a goalie who the coach said was his best player in game 3.
And you need that and more.
Yeah, because you know the other guys who in their own way, because of all the injuries, and as Riley mentioned off the top, no skating today is the word out of the bubble from Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine or Mason Appleton. My guess is Matthew Perreault would be very, very questionable tonight. But if you're the Flames, you can't worry about that, honestly. Because I think in game 2, they thought it was going to get a little easier. It didn't get easier, did it?
No.
And it's going to be hard tonight. But the Calgary Flames can control one thing, their performance. How they deal and manage with the emotions, the opportunity. I can't. That's why I get out of bed in the morning. That is why my whole life I have loved big games, because I think it's the greatest time to assess, because it's hard. And sometimes we make it seem like it's easy. No, it only becomes easy when you show that it's easy. And you know where a perfect example is before I go today? Is this. So in Edmonton, do the Oilers have 2 of the absolutely most talented players on planet Earth? They do.
Those 2 guys are amazing.
They are amazing. But you know what? In the key moments of last night in the third period, who is better, Jonathan Toews or Connor McDavid?
Mm-hmm. Toews, he dug in and got at it, right?
Who's won everything in their lifetime?
Yeah.
Is that an accident?
Yeah, Captain Serious, right? You know,
that guy is a leader. I heard Brian Burke put it best today. Never bet against Jonathan Toews. And the only reason people feel that way is he earned it. Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl might be Connor McDavid is the most purely hockey talented player in 54 years of life I've ever seen. But the next step for him isn't about always relying on that talent. Now we need to be a little grittier and a little harder when it's hard.
Yeah.
They don't ask that question very often in Edmonton, I don't think.
No.
Then it's hard to ask that.
Okay, Lou, it's going to be 7 hours before you're on the air again. Can you get a little enthusiasm going?
Okay. If you can dial it up for us,
it'd be great.
Okay.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Gil. All right, there we go. There's Peter Labardius right here on Hockey Central at noon.
Flames insider Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style, your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
One thing I know is my play-by-play team is dialed in. They are ready. They are ready for a potential elimination game as we are busy here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Looking forward to it as the guys will be doing their thing. We'll go, obviously, heavy hockey right till 6 o'clock, Flames game day live, and then it'll be even more hockey, and then Flames warm up at 7:30. We'll really get into it, and 8:30, we got the call for you right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And part of the Pinder and Steinberg show today will be Inside Hockey. The beer tastes better when it's bought from a place that cheers for your team. Visit your Calgary Co-op Wine and Spirits and Beer Store today. Just like that. That's coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Let's see what Tkachuk has to say. He'll be reporting in on all the other series other than Flames and Jets. We'll do that next right here on Hockey Central at noon.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Oh, it's a game day. The playoffs in August continue. Flames and Jets game 4 tonight. Coverage all day. Play-by-play goes at 8:30. Time to talk to one of our NHL insiders. He's Eric Tkachuk. He's down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, now open for limited dine-in service with all safety precautions in place. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Check them out. They still do delivery and pickup. 6060 Memorial Drive in the Northeast. That might be just perfect for your pregame meal as you get ready for Flames and Jets. Eric, we wanted to kind of talk about all the other series. I'm wondering where's your biggest aha moment or the thing that you're kind of wondering about the most or most excited about what you've seen in the other series other than Flames and Jets right now?
Well, I'm interested in the 12-5 matchups, obviously, just because, you know, the 12s have the 5s on the brink. And so, you know, Montreal and Chicago, respectively, shouldn't be playing in whatever we're calling this, qualifying round, pre-playoffs, play-in round, whatever. You know, in under normal circumstances, those teams would be enjoying summer vacation, trying to lower their handicaps, probably by now, you know, start working out seriously for the start of a new season. And instead, you know, they have very good teams that a lot of people believe were in the Stanley Cup conversation on the brink. And we're, 5 days into this, you know, curious postseason. So, you know, and if you don't mind, let's start in the East, because I was paying particular attention to Montreal-Pittsburgh. Remember, Kelly, we talked about this 2 days ago, and my theory, which has been expressed by a lot of people, was that, you know, you really needed Carey Price to be at his best for Montreal to win that series. Well, you know what? In Game 3, Montreal was the better team. They were just flat-out better in every area of the game. They were hungrier. They won more puck battles. You know, everything is driven, I think, by Brendan Gallagher, who's just one of these really crazy, uniquely underrated players in the National Hockey League. He's one of those guys that has no off switch, right? But he's just go, go, go. And I believe that energy is infectious in this curious environment. No fans in the building. There's nobody, there's no artificial ways other than that silly noise stuff to get a team going. So it has to come from within. So I just think that players that have that drive, that, you know, that's just, it's just there every waking moment, make a greater difference in this than you know, those players that, you know, that sort of need something external to get them going. So, you know, like, unlike the first two games where I really thought Price had to be a difference maker, he didn't have to be a difference maker in game three. Montreal was just flat out better. And so I'll be very interested to see how Pittsburgh responds to this, because you could certainly tell, not just from the body language, but just in the way, you know, Mike Sullivan was speaking to his players, that he's, you know, disappointed and probably a little bit nervous right now, because he's just not getting what he needs from that group. On paper, it should be a mismatch. And I thought that Montreal just handed it to them in the game last night. They were really, really good.
And I was, you know, we had the game from the Penguins feed, so Mike Lang and Phil Bourque. And you could just tell, more so from Phil, who's been around that organization a long time, he just wasn't seeing it. He was worried about the bad penalties and just not being sharp. And, you know, if guys are around it that have seen the good and the bad, like, you wonder, maybe not every team can dial it up. Maybe that's what we're seeing in this qualifying round, that, you know, the Penguins, who, oh, by the way, have never beat the Montreal Canadiens in a playoff series. It's only been two, but I just thought I'd throw that little stat out there just to show off a little bit. But, you know, it's when guys are, the inside guys are kind of going, yeah, this doesn't look right. That's telling for a team that, you know, boy, if you think some teams in Canada are going to have an interesting offseason, you wonder about Pittsburgh, and they start thinking about where they're at and where the bar was and where it is now.
Well, I think that what they realize there is that, you know, Crosby and Malkin are still great players. Chris Letang is still a great player. So, you know, like the way that the general manager there, Jim Rutherford, manages, you know, like, he is all in all the time, knowing full well that eventually the window will close on Crosby and Malkin, and they won't be, you know, the players that you can potentially win a championship with. And I think that, you know, like, I like Crosby's compete level better than I like Malkin so far in that series. You know, like, Crosby does compete at all levels. He's really smooth, you know, and so, you know, he's not vocal. He's just, but one of those guys that is engaged. He is engaged on virtually every shift. And, you know, and whereas Malkin is a player that when his game is on, when his focus is there, when he's motivated, he can sometimes, like, look like the best player in the world, or, you know, like, at least be in the conversation, because he's so big and so strong and everything else. And for whatever reason, he just doesn't seem to have gotten it out of second gear in this series. And I don't know why. You know, I mean, the hardest thing about analyzing any playoff year, but especially this one, is that you just have no idea what's going on, you know, off the ice. You have no idea whether there's issues in personal life. You don't have any issues if there's health things going on. Nothing. You get no information. So you're just watching this thing in a complete vacuum. And then, so you're there, and often you're just left puzzled, because you think, okay, that guy there should be a lot better, and he hasn't been very good. And I don't know why, you know, and maybe he'll pick it up in the next couple of games. Maybe he's just taken some guys a little bit longer to find their form. I mean, the one thing about everybody being in quarantine for 4.5 months is you probably do get a disparate level of conditioning, you know. So these people that are workout fiends and found a way of staying in tip top shape during the pause, I guess we're calling it. You know, there are some players that are clearly ahead of others just in terms of actual conditioning. So when you factor in, you know, different varying levels of conditioning and then just the different personalities that players have, it creates this vast unknown. And so, but it's interesting. I mean, that's the whole point of pro sports, right? You know, you tune in to watch what, you know, not knowing what the outcome is going to be. And that was the thing about the Pittsburgh-Montreal. I just thought that Pittsburgh was going to pull away in the series, you know, and then you're watching the game and they're up 2-0, and yeah, I was right. And then, you know, then you look at Montreal and they're playing with poise, and they didn't let the getting behind early get them down. And it's just, you know, like, I turned to my son and I said that Montreal was going to win this game, and they did. You know, it was just, it was, it just felt inevitable the way the run of play was going. So anyway, fascinating series, absolutely fascinating series. And by the way, the series involving Edmonton, also really fascinating.
Yeah, you talked about that. I will jump over to the West here because I think that's the one that people are really talking about, because you on Tuesday said, I don't think that series is over yet. And
no.
Tell me what you saw in the first two games and what you saw last night as Chicago just keeps at it. And, you know, I mean, everyone, you know, I'm not counting Jonathan Toews out, and I certainly won't count out Connor McDavid either, right? But what are you seeing in what we've witnessed so far up in Edmonton with the Blackhawks and the Oilers?
Yeah, a lot more of what we talked about on Tuesday, because you just pointed it out. You know, so Jonathan Toews, another 2-point night or another 2-goal night, and you say to yourself, okay, well, you know, one was like a 5-on-3 goal, another one was kind of a weird tip and whatnot. But I see a guy that looked rejuvenated by the break. I when I watch Jonathan Toews play right now, I'm thinking to myself, there's a guy that, you know, because of all of those long playoff runs, you just get a lot of miles on the chassis. And, you know, at different times, I think it catches up to people. You know, we're all human, and even the best athletes are human. And, you know, you look at Toews, he looks refreshed. You look at Shea Weber, you know, another guy that, you know, missed a lot of time with injuries, a lot of miles on him, played a ton of minutes all those years. He just looks like he's back. You know, he's got, you know, gas in the tank, and he's a Weber's just been a monster for Montreal on that defense. And the same thing with Toews. You know, he was a guy that, you know, if you'd asked me, you know, where do you rank him, you know, among Canadian centers, and is he still a candidate for the Olympic team? And the answer is probably not very high, and probably not. And yet, you know, you watch him in this series and he's just been dynamic. So love the way he's playing. Always, you know, Kane is dangerous every time he's on the ice. There's development there among some of those younger players. Kirby Dach has caught my eye. You know, sort of a Getzlaff type player. You know, I didn't know very much about him, but, you know, obviously getting drafted third overall, you have to start paying attention to them once they arrive in the National Hockey League.
Do you know who he reminds me of, Eric?
Who?
Eric Daze, just back to the Chicago thing. He kind of reminds me of that. Hopefully he has a longer career than Daze did with all those injuries. But a big guy, I mean, Daze was a little bigger than Kirby, but, I mean, he looks stronger, and, I mean, that's, you know, he can move really quick for a big man, and got a pretty decent shot on him too.
That is an interesting comparison. You know, Daze obviously was a winger. I think Doc skates better than Daze did, but Daze was a finisher. Like, you're right, he was a guy when he was, you know, like you said before, I think it was his back that eventually gave out. He was a guy that was just a top rate finisher, Tim Kerr type, you know, somebody like that who was hard to move and scored a lot of goals. I think Doc is going to be maybe a more complete player. Like I said, I think a lot of people see Ryan Getzlaff, you know, just a guy that can play at both ends of the ice, plays with a bit of an edge. Skill and size is tough to beat no matter what era you're in. And he's somebody that has caught my eye. I also think, you know, we're talking about guys that have kind of got their second wind. You know, Duncan Keith, pretty good, you know, like, you know, he was an elite NHL defenseman who most of us, I don't think, thought was an elite level NHL defenseman. The last little while, you know, was just top five in minutes played for, you know, the better part of 10 years, and you know, kind of sort of fell out of, you know, view, I guess, because, you know, Chicago hasn't been very good. And then you watch, you know, Duncan Keith, and you think, yeah, that guy can still play. And then the other side with Edmonton is, you know, McDavid's still unbelievable, and Dreisaitl had his best game after two, you know, just okay games. But it really continues to fall way off after that. You know, other than Nugent Hopkins, who's, you know, just a good quality forward. I mean, Yamamoto looked so good in the exhibition game, was terrific in the, you know, second half of the season after being called up, has had a fairly quiet series so far. And, you know, they're mixing and matching up front, and they just don't seem to be, you know, getting very much from the rest of the lineup. And, you know, and guys like, you know, like Larson didn't play last night, and, you know, Darnell Nurse has just been kind of okay. And the goaltending hasn't been great. You know, Mike Smith took a lot of grief for the way the first game went. And everyone said, you got to go to Koskinen. Well, he's just been very average too. So, you know, the combination of all of those things, you know, not getting any kind of help from the bottom group, okay on defense and mediocre goals, and that's how you fall behind 2-1 in a series. Doesn't mean you can't come back and win two games. You know, they could, they might, they, you know, maybe, you know, the argument is they probably will, but boy, they are slow out of, they have been slow out of the gate. And, you know, I thought they had kind of gotten their rhythm a little bit towards the end of the season. And I think they were starting to figure out Dave Tippett's system, and they seemed a bit more organized than they had been in other years. And they're just kind of almost like they're back to the drawing board, still trying to figure out how to play that system. And, you know, you're running out of time right now.
Well, let's jump back to the East, because I want to get your thought on Carolina. Because are they the team that, you know, is going to be just that team that maybe is everything's coming together for them at the right time? Or did they just draw like a perfect match for the first qualifying round?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I spoke not an hour ago. I was on the phone with Don Waddell, the Carolina general manager, for a column I'm writing tomorrow for The Athletic. We were talking about Andrei Svechnikov, the young Russian that they drafted a couple of years ago, second overall, who's just, you know, getting better and better and better. And, you know, and my point to him was that, you know, that, like, Don used to run the Atlanta Thrashers in the early days, right? So he was the first general manager of that expansion team. The NHL gave those guys nothing. And they just really had to rely so heavily on the Ilya Kovalchuks and the Danny Heatleys, the high draft choices they had, because there really wasn't any support players there. And why is Svechnikov, you know, sort of on this really perfect development path? It's because they had a good team in place already before they drafted him. So they didn't have to force feed him in the lineup. And they, you know, they started him out playing 8 to 10 minutes a night. And then they, you know, as, you know, his first season went along, they gave him a little bit more responsibility. And then this year he had kind of a breakthrough season. And you see it right now. So if you have somebody as dangerous as Svechnikov playing behind Sebastian Aho, that's really good. And he seems to be getting better and better. And Aho is getting better and better. So I guess my answer is, yeah, they're a dangerous opponent. I think the big question mark there was how would they do without two-thirds of their, you know, their top defense players? Like, they're doing this without Dougie Hamilton. They're doing this without Brett Pesce. So that was question number one. And the other one was, you know, how would they be with Peter Mrazek? You know, he's a guy that last year, you know, gave them pretty good goaltending, got hurt and ended up, you know, not being there at the end when they lost in the conference finals. But no one should be surprised about Carolina. As I said, you know, last year they had a great run in the playoffs. They upset Washington in the first round. Washington were the defending champions. And they've got good pieces. And when healthy, that is the best defense in the National Hockey League, 1-6. And what they've proven is that they have enough depth there to replace two elite defensemen in Hamilton and Pesce. And so I think, you know, depending again on the health, I think Hamilton is probably going to play in the next series, and Pesce probably is a ways off. But but you know, if you can be as dominant as they were against the Ranger team that was playing real well, remember they were playing very, very well at the pause, and they handled them. They handled them without too much difficulty. So yeah, I'd be watching out for Carolina if I was one of those higher seeded teams that is, you know, trying to, you know, anticipate who they might get because of this round robin thing that they're playing.
And before we let you go, a potential elimination game here tonight. The Flames can get into the playoffs and get into that, you know, group of 16 if they can beat the Winnipeg Jets. Tonight's the night, 8:30, and the Flames have had some trouble. You know, they, when you go back to 2015, the last time they took a team out of the playoffs. Give me your sense of what you've seen Flames and Jets going into Game 4.
Well, that's a great question. You know, I don't generally put like a lot of stock in history. You know, the notion that, you know, just because, you know, they've had trouble in the past, you know, I don't think has a lot of bearing, especially the way this crazy year has unfolded. I kind of like the way the Flames are trending in this series, because, you know, the first game was all about, you know, the Scheifele injury and then the Laine injury and the retribution and Matthew Tkachuk, you know, is he the worst, you know, that kind of a thing. And, you know, the Game 3, it got down to hockey, and unfortunately Winnipeg, you know, is without, you know, three, you know, two star forwards and another very useful player in Appleton. And, you know, when you lose players of that caliber, it affects you, you know, and, They're missing two really great forwards. And then, Kyle Connor, who had an unbelievable season, just a fantastic season, really hasn't been able to get it going. And, Wheeler hasn't really been able to get it going. So really their two best players have been Nick Ehlers and Adam Lowry. And so, Winnipeg needs a lot more from their remaining high-end players if they want to stay alive in this series. I don't think they can just continue to rely on the Copps and the Lowrys to get them past Calgary. So, every one of these games is an entity in and of itself. And so, but I like what I've seen of the Flames lately. I like the depth of scoring. Remember we talked about how, I've been talking to my colleagues around the league and they're all going, ooh, Elias Lindholm, pretty good. Well, you know what? So he was pretty good again in game three too. So I think he's, everyone talks, uses that cliche, the coming out party, that kind of a thing. Well, if Lindholm can continue to play at this level, and if the Flames can continue, make a little bit of noise, get through this round and then see what happens after that, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot more people sort of paying attention to Elias Lindholm and just how versatile and effective he is, because he just sort of quietly gets the job done. I love players like that. I love players that, you watch them, at every shift and they do something that's smart. Sometimes it's really subtle. Sometimes it's obvious that helps you win. Just a really good pro. If you're a general manager running a team and you could recruit a bunch of guys like this, you'd win a lot of championships, I think.
Yeah, it was a good pickup. A good pickup for sure. All right, Eric, we'll let you go. Enjoy the games today and tonight, and we will talk to you on Tuesday.
All right. Who is your pick? By Tuesday, we will know. Who's got Alexis Lafreniere? Have you got a pick?
I think it's going to be the Rangers.
Okay. That would be good. Yeah. I think he would be that would be a good thing to have. Maybe he could be like a Jean Rattel, Rod Gilbert, Francophone star that takes Manhattan by storm. Yeah, that would be a good landing place for him, for sure.
And my second choice would be Pittsburgh.
Okay, well, they don't need him.
The next one, right? The next guy. It just makes sense that they'd do that just because that's, they got some crazy karma going there. So I watched a documentary on the 50 years of the Penguins, so maybe that's influencing my choice. I don't know. Who do you think?
I thought, going into game three of Pittsburgh Montreal, I was thinking, it should be Montreal, but now, first of all, Montreal has to lose and they may not, so if here's what I would tell you as somebody that again has no cheering interest in all of this, they haven't had a high pick in a long time. And, I think he would be like a really good fit there. So, if you believe the fix is in, or if you believe that, that there should be some karma thing happening, I would like to see a potential Francophone superstar land in Montreal.
Okay.
Not
going to be up the guys up the road, get another number one. No.
Yeah. That would be real popular, don't you think?
Do you think? Our text.
Yeah, I know it would be. I'm writing about that tomorrow. I went back and reviewed all of the 4 and 6 years. Wow. Unbelievable. It's uncanny how that happened. It's been 5 years since they drafted McDavid, and I still can't get over the fact that they had 4 and 6. So anyway, that's Tuesday's conversation.
We'll talk on Tuesday for sure. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye.
There we go. Eric Tkachuk, one of our NHL insiders, right here on Sportsnet. I got to tell you, our playoff pool is back. We got everyone in. The deadline to get in was Saturday, so everybody did their boxes and got ready to rock. We got everyone rolling. So after, not the qualifying round, but the first round, we're going to have a prize from Backyard Meats. And then after the second round, we're going to do that. And the third round. And then the grand prize will be a big, big, heaping of Backyard Meats delivered to your house. And also, how about this? A smoker from Paradise Bay. It's all put on with Iconic Electric and Controls, our great partners of Flames Hockey. Iconic Electric and Controls, promoting a culture of quality since 2008 and proudly owned and operated from Western Canada. Visit iconicec.ca, and we'll have the boys on from Iconic once we get a first round winner of our playoff pool. All right, take a break and hear from, as we say in the business, some sound, as we'll hear from the Winnipeg Jets head coach coming up next right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.